What does possibility mean to you?
That's a hard question.
Something that you can strive for.
That I'm able to do anything I set my mind to.
You're confident in yourself and you believe in yourself. Stuff that you could achieve.
I feel excited. Anything is possible when you're more confident.
Shoes are a huge part of that. They are the most important part of my style.
You can like express yourself in the right shoes.
Anything is possible.
DSW, countless shoes at bragworthy prices. Imagine the possibilities.
John Batchelor with Anthony Everett and Roddy Ashworth, the authors of the new book, Nero, Matricide, Music, and Murder in Imperial Rome. If you think it's over much so far, here we go. The conspirators. Piso is a man who has everything in life in first century AD Rome. He's a poet. He's a Stoic. He's well-to-do. He's married to a woman he loves, though she's not elite as he is. He knows Nero. Nero spends time at his villa, and yet, Anthony, this conspiracy, it arises out of what? Alienation from Nero? Money? What drives it?
Well, you could say almost that Agrippina's disappearance drives it, because Agrippina understood the compromises of politics, and Nero didn't. And Nero's unwillingness to compromise built up a well resentment among the senatorial class. And it was that class where the members of the conspiracy were recruited.
The recruitment is lackadaisical, as Anthony and Roddy write, half-hearted. And it takes a long time. And everybody knows about
Nothing
it.
Nothing seems to happen.
Yes.
Nothing seems to happen.
And so we come to the moment itself. There's no drawn out. There's no great plot. There's not a lot of thinking going on here. One man is sharpening his dagger. His freedman notices this and says, why are you sharpening your dagger all of a sudden? For reasons we can't entirely understand, this freedman then takes it to Nero via one of Nero's retainers. He actually speaks to Nero that day. It's the day before the plan was to be executed. And Nero has been suspicious for some time. He's actually, in fact, tortured somebody whom he heard was involved in the plot, a Greek woman who resisted the torture and stood up, in other words, deceived the emperor. But now he has new information, and he begins a purge with Tigellinus, who is his enforcer. The purge is vast, Anthony. It eventually reaches everybody. Is it the Stoics he despises? Is that a theme for him in the purge?
Well, I think it is, because the Stoics are responsible for all the difficulties that are being laid in his way.
And it reaches not only Piso, who will commit suicide, it reaches Seneca. And herein, we return to Seneca's personality, which was informative of the young Nero. You write very carefully that Seneca had in mind the death of Socrates, and that he had a dinner party in front of him. Seneca is a performer. He's a very wealthy man. He's extremely contradictory. He's tried to retire from being the emperor's assistant or the emperor's guide, not very successfully. What do you make of Seneca's death? How to regard it 2,000 years later?
It was a brave death. And once he knew that it was inevitable, that he was going to be compelled by the emperor to commit suicide, he accepted it. But he did more than accepted it. He made it into a performance. He made it into a kind of drama. He made sure that everything he said was on famous last words for a variety. Whereas if you compare him with Socrates, as he was comparing his own performance with Socrates, the mood is much more natural, much less artificial. So even when he gets it right, Seneca can't quite get it right.
The deaths of Stoics are always informed by the death of Cato, which took place more than a century before, about a century before, during the Roman Civil War. And I mention that because Seneca is in his seniority when he commits suicide as a Stoic. But in his youth is Lucan, the great Roman poet who's written a long poem of the Civil War that is celebrated at the time. It's so successful that Nero is jealous, envious, disdainful of Lucan. Is Lucan part of the plot to your knowledge, Anthony?
Yes, he was, but he was cowardly. He betrayed his mother in a hope of escape. And yes, quite wrong. However, he wrote a very good line about Cato. Victrix causa diis vacuit, said Victor Catoni. The gods favored the winning side of the Civil War, but Cato favored the losers.
Oh, very, yes, that, yes, you remind me now. I smiled because I've recently read a book about Cato, and I thought I didn't have this irony when I was celebrating Cato. You know, in America, we celebrated Cato in the 18th century, the founding fathers of America, very much.
Which Cato, the younger one? The younger one,
Cato the Younger. His sacrifice for the Republic was very much in George Washington's mind, I'm told.
Yes, you didn't have any time for him, by the way. He saw him as a kind of Norman Mailer, I suspect. He said, the thing about Cato, Cicero said, is that he thinks he's living in Plato's Republic instead of Rome's passed away excrement.
What we have here is we're dealing in two centuries, but it's in the mind of these men all the time. Did Seneca expect his death to be conveyed to Nero as a repudiation? What did Seneca think his pupil would
like? Oh, yes. Nero was not far away and was actually sending instructions by a military tribune and an army officer. And they knew all about it.
This is the first half of 65. Remember, with the fire in 64, the purges in 65, and now Nero goes home one night and murders Poppaea. What do we make of this, Anthony? Why?
Well, it may have been an accident. He may have lost his temper with her and gave her a good kicking, and which precipitated a miscarriage as she was pregnant, and then her death.
It reminds me of the death of Agrippina. Immediately afterwards, he's mournful and regretful and haunted.
He himself. He's covered with guilt.
And then he launches a second wave of purges, this time to take down, well, didn't he went towards the end of his life, he wanted to kill all the generals, all the senators.
Well, yeah, I think that was said in a fit of rage. But there's one very important thing about the conspiracy, which is that a number of very close friends and associates of Nero were implicated. And that horrified him. He had taken these friends on their terms and was mortified that they had betrayed him.
All right, here's a man who doesn't have a mother, who doesn't have a successor. He murders his wife while she's pregnant. He's led to the purge of everyone around him who was educated in his time or a part of his class. The only man he actually deals with is a sadist, Tigellius. And what does he do? What would you do after all of this? How about going on a tour of Greece to be celebrated and win the Olympic Games? Anthony, what is wonderful about history, especially Roman history, is you could never get away with this in a novel. Never.
Perfectly true. Yes, and he's been longing to go to Greece for ages, and now he has the ideal opportunity.
And he wants to win all the contests. He wants to win the Olympic contests. He wants to win the performances. Now, do the Greeks fear voting him second the way the Romans do? In other words...
Oh, yes.
Oh.
He wins all the prizes at the Olympic Games and all the other games. All the other games, they happen in different years. So there's a spread for man. For this year... When they knew that Nero was coming, they moved all the games to happen in that given year. And he won first prize. Even when he collapsed and wasn't able to finish, he still won the first prize. He nearly killed himself driving a chariot.
Yes, he won. He was a chariot racer. I beg pardon, I've bypassed that. He both wants to be a performer on the stage, acting out poetry, singing songs, and to drive a 10-horse chariot in races. He's done this for his whole life. He He's several people in one person. But what is his voice? What is his presentation? Are there any details that we have through the sources? What's he like as a singer?
Moderate, probably. We can't tell. We don't know. Because his critics all said he was rubbish. But the popular opinion was that he was not bad. One suspects he was a sort of middle-of-the-road pop singer, pop star.
And how was he as a charioteer? Were there any sources who said that the races were fixed? Anything like that?
No. It's difficult to fix the chariot race. So it's genuinely dangerous, and he very nearly copped it.
Now, he's not a modern person, so I'm not going to use psychology here. I just wonder if this combination, you've worked with him a long time in the Latin sources about him. He seems to be a person whose personality can change from year to year, day to day, week to week. Was it like that living with him? You never knew what was going to show up?
I think he is probably rather a simple person. I think he's probably rather naive, despite all the opportunities for becoming wise in the world.
He tours Greece from 66 to 68, and then he hears there's trouble. Boy, is there trouble. In Gaul, as a matter of fact, a man named Vindex is rising up against the Romans, just the way Boudicca did. But in this instance, Vindex recruits Roman governors and generals to rise up against Nero. What is Vindex's complaint of the emperor? He's a Gaul. He's not Roman.
Yes, but he developed some of the ideas of an ancient Roman member of the Republic, and he's cast himself as an ancient Roman, and that's his motive. He disapproves of the empire because it constrains the liberties of the subject.
What's in the immediate future is what is called the Year of Four Emperors. We're not going to go that far because this will be the end of the Julian-Claudian line. Nero is the exit. And the exit of Nero is instructive in that Nero all of a sudden was surrounded by no friends whatsoever, not even his household guards. He hears that they're coming for him. He believes it. And Anthony, I had the impression that it was all in his mind, that he was being chased by ghosts. Is that something like his end? There was nobody actually ready to execute him. He just exaggerated what could happen.
He, like Seneca, his tutor and then his enemy, he wanted to stage his death as a performance, a spectacle.
Were they planning to kill him the way he thought they were? Was the Senate bold enough to do that, to execute him?
Oh, yes. They condemned him as a public enemy.
I see. So when he fled to the suburbs, it's all very dramatic again. He flees to the suburbs and he's with the least of them. He's not with anyone of his class whatsoever.
He's with a senior freedman and one or two others, and Sporus of all people stays loyal despite all that had been done to him.
And he stabs himself in the throat with a knife.
With assistance from Epaphroditus.
In the throat. That's what I took. In the throat.
Yes.
In other words, he goes after his voice box.
Oh, that's interesting. I've not thought of that. Yeah, it's very good.
Well, he's a Hollywood script. I'm figuring he's always thinking this through, unless it was he's just spontaneously dramatic.
I think that's right. I'm sure you're right.
There's no end to Nero, except for there he is dead. Galba, a man who will not survive more than a few months before. Well, it's a series of emperors that eventually lead to Vespasian. And what I like about Vespasian is that he was early on. It's like in a movie, you want to introduce the end of the movie somewhere in the first act. Vespasian, what is it, a breakfast table with the young Nero? I don't remember where they...
He drops off during one of Nero's performances.
And Vespasian is sent to solve the Jewish revolt with Nero not really caring that much about it. But Vespasian and his son Titus, he leaves Titus behind. Those of us who have been...
The Vespasian was that he couldn't apply for the succession. He was too dull and too ordinary and too junior. And that's why Nehru appointed him, because he wouldn't be a danger, political danger to him.
And of course, that's exactly what he becomes after Rome is burned again. There's a fire again in 69, but that's in the future. Nehru's dead. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the sources. So much of the opinion of Nehru in the 21st century depends upon the writers who have over several centuries told this story. The book is Nehru, Matricide, Music, and Murder in Imperial Rome. Nehru the monster, Nehru the performer, Nehru the son is dead. Who tells us that? Anthony Everett and Roddy Ashworth are the authors. I'm John Bash.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
What if every student had a tutor and personalized learning was available to everyone? What if every family had a financial guide and their investments made for an optimistic future? What if every doctor could diagnose you in seconds and healthcare visits felt more personal? What if your business never slept? And every customer's shopping experience felt like it was designed especially for them? It can with Agent Force, the powerful AI from Salesforce.
I'm Rodney Williams.
And I'm Travis Holloway. Welcome to The Wealth Break.
Let's be honest, building wealth doesn't look the same for everyone. It's not just about saving, it's about investing. It's about navigating systems that weren't built for you, embracing your hustle, and relying on your community to create something bigger.
And that's exactly why we created The Wealth Break. We made something different, something more human. It's not just another financial podcast. It's a conversation about real life, real struggles, and real wins.
We're here to talk about the journey. You're hearing from people who've broken barriers, found creative ways to succeed, and learned to build wealth on their terms. Whether it's the first-time homeowner, a gig worker, or someone turning a side hustle into a six-figure business, we're bringing you their stories.
And we're not stopping at success stories. We're breaking down the realities, like what it means to take risk, how to navigate failure, and why resilience matters. Because wealth isn't about money. It's about creating a life where you can thrive and help others to do the same.
So if you're ready for a podcast as much as about people as it is about money, you're in the right place.
Listen to The Wealth Break podcast on the iHeartRadio app.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code iHeart or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.